live from New York, it's The Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, broadcasting but not video streaming today, finishing up some final shots of our film that will be announced shortly. We'll be showing a trailer of it, a sneak preview, coming next week, an extended trailer. Trailer's generally about 2 minutes, 15 seconds. This will be 5 minutes. Just to show you the breadth and depth that this is the most comprehensive, all-inclusive documentary ever done on all of our environmental problems, only one of which is global warming. Today, we're going to start with eating more plant proteins. That's split pea protein, rice, hemp, is associated with a lower risk of death. Massachusetts General Hospital and Harvard Medical School, published in the Journal of American Medical Association's Internal Medicine. Now, why did I say that? Because I want people to know that everything I share on this program is based upon good quality, provable, published science. Then we have a lot more coming at you. But today's a special day also, in that I'm going to take you to a little different area, and that is what we call tapping into the ethereal. We're going to have a short discussion, and that short discussion is a dialogue between a very famous Buddhist scholar and a theoretical physicist. And you're going to hear some things you haven't heard before. And this is a direct challenge to the skeptics who say there is nothing but the atom. When you're dead, you're dead. There is no God. They're all atheists. And that everyone who believes otherwise is just believing in foolish superstitions and you're stupid. Well, we don't challenge you for being atheists or agnostic. That's your right. But we do challenge the idea that your views of our reality should limit us in that reality. So we're going to also have a professor of neuroscience and a neurosurgeon, physician, and scholar from Harvard Medical School talking today about him being a skeptic. Yeah, he was one of them. He is not now. You're going to hear about his journey. Then I'm going to talk about the only, at least I'm not aware of any other. There may be others. I looked and I couldn't find any, but I had the only experiment ever done in American scientific history to scientifically prove that we are not just atoms, that the reductionist scientism model that we're now being controlled by is limited. And that'll be an interesting discussion. So you see, we have a lot to share. I'm also going to give you some phone numbers. Please take the time to write these down. First, we have a tremendous archive. And you can go and, with just one phone call, download 5 archival shows, or you can go up on the archives on the internet and download all you want. They're free. That number for the archives is 701-719-9976, 701-719-9976. And just think, instead of turning on a television and watching some program that's not going to do anything for you, this will do something for you. Then we have a voicemail line where you can call in and ask a question or make a statement. Now, since most of the people don't listen to this program live, Monday to Friday, noon to 1, they might listen to it in the evening and think, I wished I could have called in. You can. Call in. If you hear something that inspires you to a thought that we could all appreciate from, here's our voice line, 862-800-6805. Again, 862-800-6805. Now, a lot of people listen in. In fact, it's my most listened to program, the Progressive Commentary Hour. It's a heavy show. It's one topic in depth, generally with one or two guests. And here's the progressive. You want your brain to be stimulated. You want a light bulb to go off in your consciousness. This will do it. And I must have thousands of shows up there. 701 719 0999. This is the Progressive Commentary Hour archives. 701-719-0999. And if you just want to listen live every day, 705-562-7900. 605-562-7900. Again, listening live every day, 605-562-7900. Now let's go to the latest on health and healing. And we're going to begin with the idea of what kind of protein do we consume. And the science is in, and it's overwhelming. Eating more protein from plants is associated with a lower risk of death, and eating more protein from animals is associated with a higher risk of death. So not only do we disprove one point, that veganism doesn't make a difference, it makes a huge difference, but we also disprove another myth, that we need animal proteins. You do not. So, two different points of view: eat protein and die sooner, eat vegetable proteins and live longer. And that's in the Journal of the American Medical Association, this publication, internal journal, done at Harvard Medical School and Massachusetts General Hospital. And they studied 131,342 participants, and 64% were women, average age 49, and they came up with these results. So, good study. From Punjab University, which is in India, lycopene, lyco, L-Y-C-O-pene, P-E-N-E, in tomatoes, and actually enhancing it, suppresses chemically induced skin tumorigenesis in mice, meaning in lay language that when you have more tomatoes, tomato sauce, tomato juice, which is good, eating tomatoes, you're protecting your skin from skin cancer. From Brigham Women's Hospital comes a study published in the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition that shows that the more nuts that you consume, the less inflammation you have overall in your body. 5,000 people were in this study, and they found that you really lower your biomarkers for inflammation. Now, mind you, inflammation is one of the primary causes of C-reactive protein, interleukin 6, tumor necrosis factor 2. All of these you can't feel, you won't know they're there, but when they go up, and the numbers go up, and you eat meat and sugar and alcohol, the numbers go up. You're stressed, the numbers go up. Live in a polluted environment with a lot of air pollution, numbers go up. Around electromagnetic frequencies, numbers go up. And that means you're going to have a disease. Now, where you have the disease manifest is where you're most vulnerable, in your lungs, in your heart, in your brain, in your eyes, in your elbows and knees, toes, fingers. These are all points where inflammation can manifest as pain, but also in your pancreas and diabetes, cancer, heart disease. So the more nuts you eat, and of course eat them organic and raw, you're going to be healthier by a major margin. Also, for those of you who know someone suffering from polycystic ovarian syndrome, if they take L-carnitine, C-A-R-N-I-T-I-N-E, carnitine. This is according to Shahid Beheshti University of Medicine, and they found that, and that's in Iran, they found that polycystic ovary syndrome, by the way, that's a very common disorder in women of reproductive age, and that L-carnitine helps with that. That's good. From the University of Adelaide, meat consumption is contributing to global obesity. So, and so many times I've done this, but I, once again, just for those who are new, and we have a lot of new listeners, we think that when we're eating in most restaurants, that we're getting a good portion of steak if you're a meat eater. In fact, a lot of restaurants will tell you they can only compete if they give larger and larger portions. And you see the commercials. Now they'll put is it a waffle or, you know, and they'll make a waffle, but they'll also have bacon and waffles. Or they'll have French toast, which is just, it's pure carbohydrate. It's pure sugar. They're giving you white bread, a big piece. Then they douse it in a batter of some egg and lots of sugar and cinnamon, and they fry it. There's your trans fats and all your acrylamides, inflammatory markers. And then they put bacon on top of that. Or they'll give you a hamburger now with big bun. You know, the bigger the bun, the bigger the perception that you're going to be full. And then on top of that, they're giving you eggs and bacon and French fries and or onion rings and pulled pork. I mean, they just keep adding. And I'm sure that in the near future, you'll see ads for something that's about a foot thick that probably has 8,000 calories. And they want to offer it at a low price so that they compete. So let's just say that you go into a restaurant and you say, hey, I like that steak. Okay, 16 ounces. 8 ounces of that is protein. Now, protein is not stored in the body. What you don't use is broken down through a process called deaminization. In the process of breaking it down, you create two byproducts of protein. One is urea, and the other is ammonium. Both are toxic. And the more ammonium or urea you have in your body, the more toxic and damaged your kidneys and your liver. And if it goes to the brain, your brain. You got 20.35 grams to an ounce. Let's round it off to 28. So you got 8 ounces of meat times 28. That's giving you 224 grams of protein. However, let's just say that you're a female 5'7", 135 pounds, and you're in good shape. Okay, you'll need somewhere between 40 to 55 grams of protein a day. Well, that's for an entire day. You've just gotten what? You've gotten 224 grams in one item, in one meal, in one day. So you're probably going to top off that day at around 300 grams of protein. Or put another way, let's just round it off and say that you have 50 grams that you need, and you're eating 300. You just consume 600% more protein in one day than your body requires. And you wonder why. You have brain fog, why you have inflammation all over your body, and why you fatigue. But also, you're getting calories. So how many calories? 4 calories to a gram. So then you've got 4 calories times 224 is, let me think, 896. So we got 896 calories just in the meat part of that, all right, 896 calories. But then if you try fat, and the other 8 ounces is fat, so if you have 8 ounces and it's times 28, let me just think here, 8 times 28 is going to get, again, 224, but now you're getting 8 grams of fiber. You get twice the amount of calories in fat as you do in protein, twice as much. So you then take 224 times 8, and you're up to 1,792 grams of calories. Now, if you add 1,792 calories from fat in one piece of meat and 892 calories, you're at 2,688 calories in one steak in one meal. And we wonder why we're obese. And we wonder why those high-protein diets actually make you fatter and more constipated and cause putrefaction and cause destructive bacteria and destroy your healthy biome in the intestine. So, University of Adelaide says, yeah, meat consumption is contributing to global obesity. They are correct. Also, for those of you who have Alzheimer's or dementia. Remember, Alzheimer's is but one form of dementia. From Shenyang Medical College in China comes a study that shows that natural psilocybin, which is milk thistle, modulates the amyloid beta protein in Alzheimer's disease. So that's good news. So take milk thistle every day if you are starting to have memory loss or and any form of dementia. Also, from the University of Chicago, your soap and toothpaste could be messing with your microbiome. Why? Because of our antimicrobial chemicals that we put in these common household products are weakening your gut healthy bacteria and, in effect, wrecking habit. And that's according to the scientific study. And why? Because I've told you many times, there's a chemical. It's specific, and never use it, never. It's called triclosan. C-L-O-S-A-N. Triclosan is an antibacterial compound. You're going to find it in soaps and all those little antibacterial washes and bathrooms, detergents, even toothpaste, even in toys and plastics. It was originally used in hospitals, but it found its way into American homes because of our germ phobia. Fine, wash your hands, but do so with soap. So now there's growing concern about the possible negative effects of the chemical on human health and environment. And according to the U.S. Food and Drug Administration, animal studies have shown that the chemical can act as a hormone disruptor. Yeah. It was found in 75% of the urine of people, or 75% of the people using it, any of these antibacterial soaps. So it goes right through your skin. And this was done at the University of Chicago. So stay away from all these antibacterial products. And finally, from Brigham and Women's Hospital, breastfeeding is associated with better brain development and neurocognitive outcomes. This is good news. This was published in the Journal of Pediatrics. A new study which followed 180 preterm infants from birth to age 7 found that babies who were more breastfed within the first 28 days of life had a larger volume of certain regions of the brain at term equivalent and had better IQs, academic achievement, working memory, and motor function. And by the way, what is the best single mushroom? Bet you didn't know this. For benefiting your brain and nervous system? Lion's mane. Lion, L-I-O-N-S. Mane, M-A-N-E. It's nature's gift to your nervous system. It is the only mushroom possessing not one but two potent nerve growth factors, showing potential benefits for Parkinson's, Alzheimer's, multiple sclerosis, mild cognitive impairment, leg cramps, and anxiety. How about that? So it improves your cognitive function, nerve regeneration, remyelinization, increasing nerve growth factor, improves digestive function, relieves gastritis, immunosupportive, anti-inflammatory, antioxidant, anticoagulant, and it improves lipid profile. That is lion's mane mushroom. That's good news. And that's the latest on health and healing. I'm Gary Nall. We're going to take a break and come right back. And when we come back, I want to get your opinion on something. And then while we're playing some clips that I think are very important for you, I'd like your feedback, and we have a special number you can call for feedback, 888-874-4888. That's 888-874-4888. And here it is. In today's paper, there is a whole full page, and it's about what is called, I'll read the headline, UES Bistro has staffed Google unknowns. Quote, I'm so sorry, but are you somebody who's anybody? No, well, have you tried the burger joint next door? And what the host of this Upper East Side Manhattan eatery, Fleming, by a group, they require their staff to Google any potential diners to see if they're worthy of eating there. And what is the criteria of getting into this bistro to eat? And you can't get in if you're not, quote, rich. That's right. Rich. Rich people get in. Anyone else can't, and they make sure you're rich by Googling you. So, there would have been a time in American history where people would have been offended by this. Because what they're saying is, if you're not rich, then we don't want you in here. But if someone's able to pay for a meal, why should you judge the quality of that person as a customer by any other metrics than wealth? Would you have allowed Gandhi in there? Martin Luther King wasn't rich. Gandhi wasn't rich. René Dubos, Buckminster Fuller were not rich. George Borgstrom was not rich. Linus Pauling was not rich. Oh, Nobel Prize winners. Jane Goodall is not rich. Think of all the great people who have contributed or did contribute and left a legacy to our society. They wouldn't be allowed in there. What does that tell you about people priding themselves on who they can exclude? This is identity, not just identity politics. This is identity economics. Separately, as you know, today is the last day that a group of Google invitees were there to discuss such things as global warming, and all of them, every single one from Tom Cruise, now there's an environmental scientist, if there ever was one, and Katy Perry, who must know everything there is to know about acidification of the ocean and what is causing the whales to die and the flesh-eating bacteria that is now spreading 80,000 cases a year in the United States, making the entire Gulf of Mexico unusable, the sand beaches unwalkable, and the real estate, well, friends, the fire sale has already begun. You will see the greatest exodus, I believe, over the next 2 years off the beaches of Florida of any place in the United States, because no one's going to, and by the way, just a sliver of land is $6 million. And so here are these people who have nothing to do with the environment. Oh, I forgot, my mistake. They have a lot to do with the environment. These are the major polluters in the world. David Geffen in a $400 million yacht that is producing more carbon dioxide than 100,000 human beings. And they're staying on his yacht, and then there's Barry Diller. He doesn't want to be left out of it. In fact, I was the only person in the history of the home, not the Home Shopping Network, I would later do that, but the other shopping network that Barry Diller owned. And I stopped it after I saw how he was doing business. I didn't want to go back. And yet I had broken every record there for selling books and everything else. Anyhow, not a person I respect. But he's there with a $200 million. That's just chump change to Geffen. But major, put the two together and you have two of the biggest polluting vehicles in the world. And then every single star flew in there on a private jet. And they're celebrities. What in the world do they have to do at a climate? Because they're important people, just like the restaurant. We don't care if Tom Cruise and Perry are not into the environment at all and ride on private jets and have multiple homes and consume meat and buy everything in the world for themselves and their hangers-on. We have to have them there. This is Google. This rot starts at the top of Google, totally corrupt organization, and goes clear to the bottom. But people are fascinated with this. There will be no criticism anywhere of this. People who are causing the most pollution in the world, who just the people at this retreat talking about global warming are causing more pollution than all of the bushmen of the Kalahari Desert. But it doesn't matter. All we look at is they're a celebrity. They're famous. They must be so much more unique than us. No, they're not. They're not. You have no idea the contempt I have for not all, by any means, but by most celebrities today in all fields. In fact, just this morning in the park, I was stopped by someone who I had agreed to do some auction counseling and give them some of my cookbooks and things. They're auctioning it, and it's for a very good cause. 100 cents on the dollar, and I verified it goes to feed hungry children. So I said, yes, I'll help you. And the person running it, but they're having celebrities there, and would I come early to meet the celebrities? I have no desire in the world to meet any of these schmucks. You know, I don't want to ever in my life, ever let any celebrity in my presence feel that they're a better human being than the poorest person living homelessly on a street in Los Angeles, because they're no better. I feel there's a contempt for humanity that all these celebrities have when they actually think that they're a celebrity and take it seriously. Those are my personal views. Those are subjective. I'd like to hear yours, because now none of this is being hidden. It's being flaunted and praised So it's a new religion of exclusive consumerism and a title of deity if you're able to afford this. Your thoughts on that? We're going to come back from a new music break, and when we come back, we're going directly into listening to, and we're going to have Richard Gale tell us why the person that we're going to listen to is such a unique presence, and how he challenges the skeptics, the atheists, who believe that there is only one reality. And instead of accepting there may be universal consciousness, individual consciousness, that exceed the biological limitations of what we have defined as life processes. Back in a moment. Okay, Richard Gale, explain why this short interview, it's a very short interview, is so important for at this time when everything is being reduced to an atomical level of understanding life. Everything is reductionist. There is no value in belief. There's no value in faith. There's no value in higher being. There's no God. There is no spirituality that's authentic or real. That's what the skeptics and Jimmy Wales and the people controlling Wikipedia and Google and Facebook, that's what they believe. And they have powerful forums to exclude anyone else, condemn people. They just condemned Deepak Chopra, and we went to his defense. He's not even aware we went to his defense, but we're going to other people's defense because they don't have the same forum we have. So explain quickly why this person, who they probably never heard of, why he is so important to listen to what he's saying.
Yes, good afternoon, Gary. So this is actually a clip, it's a short clip. This was a debate that was held between Dr. Alan Wallace. Alan Wallace was a Tibetan monk for 14 years, initiated by the Dalai Lama. I think he was 21 when he became a monk. He went then to some of the top universities, became a physicist, studied neuroscience, taught at the University of California, Santa Barbara, and now he's pretty much a meditation teacher and a lecturer on consciousness. And this is a debate that was held with Alan and Sean Carroll. Now, Sean Carroll's an astrophysicist. He's one of the celebrity gurus in the skeptic movement and the new atheism, New York Times bestseller. What was on the subject, whether consciousness really exists outside of the brain or not. The skeptics believe that consciousness is simply the firings, the electrical firings, the neurotransmitters, everything that's associated with the physical brain. And, of course, there's 2,500-year history or 5,000-year history of looking at consciousness from an introspective point of view, as in Asia, that has a completely different view. And there's about 250 different definitions of consciousness in the scientific literature. So there's basically we know less about consciousness or the mind, for that matter, than we do about galaxies and all. So this is what that's just the context of this. What we're going to be listening to with Alan.
Okay, now to the clip.
And then he said, well, what shall we do? He said, test it for yourself. He was truly an empiricist. And so we come back to the stories. And I can say among all the people I cited, they were all white, male, 20th century, mainstream, reputable, or perhaps even eminent physicists. But what I've noted in my reading over the last, especially the 25 years or so since I was a student at Amherst, 30 years, was that so much of this discourse suggests a blindness in modern science generally. I'm not pointing fingers at this person or that person. Just a generalization, see whether it's true. Blind to any possible insights into the fundamental nature of reality, what is the underlying nature of reality, from any of the great civilizations of Asia over the past 5,000 years, China, Japan, India, Southeast Asia, Tibet. Where do we ever hear any references? Did those people there in Asia discover anything that might be relevant for 5,000 years? And it basically doesn't come up? Let alone indigenous cultures all over North and South America, Africa, Australia, and so forth. In other words, this is a very narrow sliver of humanity that seems to regard itself as the center of the universe. So questions come up, we hear them, that is there intelligent life elsewhere in the universe? And the answer is, yeah, Asia. I mean, it's really been overlooked. In the 19th century, we understand that. But now in the 21st century, to ignore whole civilizations, there's blind on one point. One point, because my time's running out too. Blind in another way. We have these marvelous array, diverse branches of modern science, and for everyone, it's characterized by developing sophisticated, rigorous, precise modes of measurement, of observation of that which you're seeking to understand. Right? There's one exception. You know what that is? Mind. Behaviorists study the mind indirectly by studying behavior. Brain scientists study the brain correlates of mind. But not in psychology, not in cognitive neuroscience. Where is there in mainstream academia any rigorous training in observing the only mind you have any direct access to? Where? And I've been looking and I'm not finding. We haven't done it. We study things that are related to mind, but we're not looking at it in a rigorous, sophisticated way. This is what Asia has been good at for 5,000 years, the Buddhist tradition for 2,500. Developed, highly developed, sophisticated ways of training, first of all, attention, which we in the modern world suck at. I mean, we're getting worse. We're slipping into a trough of ADHD from which we may never extricate ourselves. And then not only developing attention skills, which has got to be good, and they're extremely good at it. We've hardly even aware that it's taking place there for 2,500 years, longer in the Hindu tradition. But then developing and refining metacognitive ability to observe thoughts, to explore multiple dimensions, layers of consciousness. There's a whole world here that we're not attending to. Therefore, it seems to be just a way of talking about the brain. It's not. And I can demonstrate that, and it's going to take 10 seconds. For 10 seconds, I'm going to ask you to do something very simple. Mentally be totally silent, don't move, don't behave, and just be aware of what's coming to mind. 10 seconds of rigorous, refined, first-person inquiry into mind to complement the glories, the magnificent accomplishments of objective science, which is the strength of the West. Thank you.
Thank you.
And what he's telling us is that around the world, in other cultures, there have been individuals, the shamans throughout the entirety of Central and South America, even the shamans in Mexico, Yucatan Peninsula, the shamans in Africa, the Buddhists and the meditators in Eastern, Southeast Asia. We have not acknowledged any of these as relative to understanding the brain, and yet they have had multiple opportunities to go there and to study with them. They haven't, because they're looking for something in a laboratory, some molecule that can be manipulated, patented, and proprietized, and that's the unfortunate part. Well, one of those skeptics had an experience. We're going to go to this short clip. This is a board-certified neurosurgeon and a professor and an academic at Harvard Medical School. Listen to his story. Jesse's going to work on it. When we get it ready, we will play it again. Now, and if he can't get it ready, I'll tell you what he had to say. And he said this on ABC Network. Now to my own experience. Back in the early 1970s, I was puzzled by a phenomenon I had seen growing up in West Virginia, where doctors would go in and sit at a patient's bedside, hold their hand, and pray with them. And these were called, in the local vernacular, Christian doctors. And what it was is people felt that they had better outcomes when a doctor prayed with them. Whether that was true or not, no one was doing the actual study. And so when I came to New York and I was a research fellow at the Institute of Applied Biology, my main goal was to see if we could reverse the aging process. And that's where I did my work. But I also did psi work. And one of the experiments, I went to the institute director and I said, can I do this? It's very unusual. And he said, what is it? I said, I'd like to get people who have a reputation for helping people heal through some form of faith. And he said, well, that's very unusual. There's no science to prove that. And I said, no, there's no. But it's just a theory. And I'd like to challenge the theory, see if I can scientifically validate it. And he's okay. He said, but keep it very quiet. I don't want this getting out because it might impact our funding. I said, fine. So I put the word out, and we looked for people who had some experience or believed that they could help people who were sick by direct healing or absentee healing. Catherine Coleman, Olga Wuerl, some very well-known names at that time, and the most famous healer in Great Britain, Harry Edwards. A lot of people joined in. We had 50 people all told. But at the end of the first part of the experiment, only 6 of the people, of the 50, were actually able to do it. But a scientific study is not legitimate doing it just once. You have to have it reproducible. So we did it 6 more times. It took almost 2 years. And in all 6 times, all 6 people were able to do what no one else had ever been able to do. And we documented it. We have photographs of this and them actually doing this up on my website. And what it was is this. We had ascites tumor rats. These lived a very short period of time. And these people could come in, and they could, with an attendant present, it was generally myself or one of the other people in the lab, they could, whatever they were doing, they could do, whether it was prayer or meditation. And in all 6 cases, all of the rats were healed. Now, you cannot say that it is a spontaneous remission. You can't say that it is just an anomaly or idiopathic of unknown origin. When you do something 6 out of 6 times and get the same results, that's scientific validation. And we did it. We photographed it. I recorded it. Now, here are the people. The head of nursing at New York University, Dolores Rath, and that's where Therapeutic Touch was founded. Almost every nurse in America has learned Therapeutic Touch and uses it. A rabbi, Abraham Wiseman from Brooklyn, who was known as the healing rabbi. Dr. Morton Jacobs, who was known as the chiropractic with the healing hands. Dr. Thomas Kruth, the Order of St. Luke. Kriger. Dolores Krieger of New York University, and Dr. Audrey Carger. So all these people had a long history of believing that their thoughts, and each one came from a different perspective, could be transmitted where they were the vehicle where energy formed itself into a healing energy through them into a person, or in this case, mice. I then tried other experiments. They were able to do things like, we had 2 rooms, lead-bound rooms. In one side, we had sprouts. On the other side, identical sprouts from the same seed bag, same amount of light, same amount of water, same soil. And when they went in and meditated over the sprouts in one room, those sprouts just zoomed up. They were healthier and almost 300% greater growth when the energy went into them. And so I wrote an article for a scientific publication on therapeutic touch and or energy transfer. And that was the basis of what I would see, and I would apply that. I did many other experiments on energy transfer, and it's real. So they say that there is no such thing as energy transfer, but we did it, and we did it scientifically. And there were a lot of witnesses to this, scientists, physicians, people in the lab, and a journal published it. In fact, 2 journals published it. Yet they deny that. They deny the reality. They deny that there have been studies showing that prayer works. So that's that. Now we have the clip of the neurosurgeon, a skeptic. And here's what he had to say.
Various polls find that somewhere around 80% of Americans do. But a Harvard-trained brain surgeon wasn't so sure until he spent a week in a coma and came out with an incredible description of the afterlife. My co-anchor Terry Moran has a story.
A mild afternoon in Lynchburg, Virginia, and Eben and Holly Alexander are at a high school soccer game cheering on their 14-year-old son, Bond. They are a perfectly ordinary American family with an extraordinary story. They have been touched by a medical miracle, and maybe more.
I mean, it was impossible after impossible after impossible.
Eben Alexander, a Harvard-trained neurosurgeon who was a skeptic when it came to religion, survived a near-death experience, and he now carries the memory of what he says was a journey to heaven, a journey that all his scientific training cannot explain. On November 10th, 2008, Eben awoke with a searing headache. When his wife Holly checked in on him, he was having a tremendous seizure.
And I said, "Say something." And he didn't say anything, so I called 911.
Eben was rushed to the hospital, where he worked as a neurosurgeon.
The only word we could truly make out was help. And the rest of his verbalization was purely screaming.
Eben Alexander had been stricken with an extremely rare and virulent E. coli meningitis infection that was ravaging his brain, plunging him into a coma.
I mean, I was trying to die.
In fact, doctors gave him almost no chance to live and told his family if he did survive, he'd be brain damaged for the rest of his life.
His eyes were just off and cocked. It was just like no one was there.
Eben believes Holly is right. He wasn't there.
Did you go to heaven?
Yes. I mean, in every sense of the word, that's what my experience showed me.
His first recollection, he says, was being a speck of pure awareness in a dark and murky underworld.
And then I was rescued by this beautiful spinning white light that had a melody, indescribably beautiful melody with it, that opened up into a bright valley. Just an incredible, rich, ultra-real world of indescribable complexity.
God was there, he says, and he encountered him through an orb of brilliant light. He soared on the wing of a butterfly with a beautiful young woman as his companion, and the young woman gave him a message to take back from heaven.
You are loved. You are cherished. There's nothing you have to fear. There's nothing you can do wrong.
It's a beautiful vision, but heaven?
A lot of people are going to say, "Doctor, it was a hallucination. Your brain got zapped by this disease. All the wires got crossed. And you saw a girl on a butterfly wing, and you were spinning up in a melody."
I know this was not a hallucination, not a dream, not what we call a confabulation. I know that it really occurred, and I know it occurred outside of my brain.
So basically...
But how? How can he even suggest that, much less claim that his experience is proof of heaven, as he's called his new book? He showed us his brain scan.
It wasn't leaving any part of my cortex unaffected.
So your conclusion is because all of this outer area, which is the higher functioning, was covered with the infection, what you experienced in the coma wasn't part of the brain.
Right.
Many neuroscientists are deeply skeptical of Eben's claims, arguing his brain must have produced his vision somehow, most likely as he came out of coma. But something else happened. After he recovered, Eben, who was adopted, saw a picture of a sister from his biological family who died years ago, a woman he never knew.
And I knew who my guardian angel was on the butterfly wing. It was the most profound experience I've ever had in this life.
Your sister, by birth, and from a family that you didn't know because you were adopted, who died several years ago, who you had never met, you saw while you were in coma.
Yes. And that was the key. That explained everything.
Seems good, that's for sure.
Dinner time at the Alexander home.
Come, Lord Jesus, our guest to be, blessed.
They were not a particularly religious family before Eben's coma. He was a skeptic.
not anymore.
This proves that our soul, our consciousness, our spirit doesn't depend on the existence of the brain and body at all, and easily is actually freed up to a much higher state of knowing when it's freed from this body.
Just as some thoughts, I interviewed and worked with at least 300 people who had unique experiences that could not be explained through our normal linear scientific tools, but use a different paradigm, use different tools, and it opens different doors of awareness. What I'm saying in the skeptic movement is people who are only using one set of tools, and therefore when we have remarkable healings, when we have things that cannot be explained, the reversal of a brain tumor in a matter of weeks when it was inoperable, people who were in wheelchairs for 16 years suddenly getting up and walking, they say, well, that's not possible. Well, we filmed it. It is possible. But with the tools you're using, you're not going to understand it. That's why I say, don't ask me what we're doing, because you're not going to understand it. Anyhow, I will share some of these as we go on, because we're writing a very in-depth article about the way the skeptics have been able to control so much of science and so much of medicine to where we're actually limiting even not just the ability, the desire, but even possibly legally to even discuss any other form of healing, and why they want to destroy chiropractic and meditation, they want to destroy yoga, they want to destroy holistic, organic, everything involving health they want to destroy. That's why they're demeaning it. That's why there's no open debate. And by the way, open debate, I want to thank all the people who came to the demonstration yesterday. It was a peaceful demonstration, and it was there not as a rally and not as a protest. It was there as an education to inform people of what it means to be educated on vaccine issues. I gave out several hundred of the films to the people who were there, not the people on the street, and said, now start sharing this over the internet, because this is how you gain awareness. And if you have enough people seeing a film like Deadly Deception, you see how the politicians have been paid off by the pharmaceutical industry, the politicians in California paid off, how much they were received, how they have no background in science, and they refuse to look at the actual evidence of how bad vaccines are. This is a way of opening up the awareness and connecting with those millions of parents of vaccine-injured children, so you have a collective working together with science, real independent science on your side, demand congressional hearings. Now, yesterday we mailed out to every member of Congress a letter asking for an open inquiry into Wikipedia, Google, and Facebook, where we the people, are allowed to come and give evidence. And our experts, our vaccinologists and immunologists and toxicologists are allowed to give experts, not a panel picked by Google or Facebook that does nothing, admits nothing, and the government doesn't ask the right questions, nothing comes from it. And my hope is that we'll be able to get the power to change and take away the legal identification that exists now, so that they're held accountable as everyone else in America is held accountable. If you slander someone, you can be sued. You can defend yourself, and the person can sue you. But at least there are consequences. Right now, there's no consequence to Wikipedia and all of its skeptics slandering and destroying reputations of people and then not allowing any opportunity for any change, going against its own bylaws. So every member of Congress now you, the people in this audience and the people last night, we have prepared over 54 articles just on vaccines. We prepared letters, two major articles on 5G. We prepared over 35 articles on Wikipedia. We have sent articles, letters to Congress. They're up on the website, prn.fm. I'm asking you, go there, download these, and share them with everyone you can, the legislators in particular, because it's only when under oath and before congressional hearing that we're allowed to explain ourselves, will something good come from all this? And that's what we're hoping will happen, and I'm confident it will. But you have to become involved. As I said to the group last night, how many times in life have you gone out and protested anything? None. Written letters? Never. But when it involves you, when your child's suddenly injured, You're angry, rightly so. You're concerned, absolutely. And then you're concerned that other people walk by you on the street here and think you're a nut job and call you names, as they did. And then I called out one of the people, and I said, "Sir, would you debate me?" And he said, "Yeah." And I said, "Please, tell us why you believe that what we're doing here in sharing information on vaccine safety and efficacy is wrong." And he did. And then I just, well, you'll watch. I took that argument just tore to pieces. And he got angry and cursed at everyone. And we're going to play that. That'll be up on YouTube shortly. But I said to them, why should anyone be concerned about your pain that you're suffering when you haven't concerned yourself about any other pain? Where was there a march in America for the children and people in Yemen and for the homeless in the United States and the homeless children in the United States, the people earning under $5 a day in the United States? There are millions of them. And there's not any effort on anyone's behalf. We've become a very self-absorbed, narcissistic, or withdrawn nation. And hence, it's very easy to manipulate people in that state of mind. And that's what's happening now. But hopefully people awaken from their stupors and from their hubris and say, yeah, there are wonderful people in this country. There's a lot of good things we can do. There's a lot to live for. Let me engage myself and become optimistic and positive instead of feeling like a victim and taking the victimization road. And by the way, this coming Sunday, we had 37% of the people called in and reserved, so we were filled up, but they did not confirm, so they're out. So as of now, we have 7 positions for the workshop I'm doing this Sunday and for the next 4 Sundays. This is a real clinical study where I'm going to help people understand lifestyle behavior modification to impact diabetes, arthritis, insomnia, and fatigue. That's one workshop that starts at 1:00. At 2:30, another workshop starts on depression, anxiety, sadness, loneliness, fear of life, apathy, and confusion of life. And that's a separate group. We have 5 positions open for that. If you'd like to join us, then give a call. This is the last opportunity to get in. 646-926-5459. 646-926-5459. And tomorrow, I'll be up in Woodstock for the premiere of a new film and a discussion afterwards. I believe the film starts around, let's see, when does it start? Noon? It's at noon or 12:30, I believe. No, excuse me, it's 1:30 tomorrow, 1:30. And it's at 132 Tinker Street, T-I-N-K-E-R, Woodstock. And just show up. Look forward to seeing you there. Now, we're going to go out today listening to Jimmy Dore deconstruct the Mueller probe, the lies about that all this was due to Russian interference in our election. It was not. This was all about protecting the Clintons, the power base they have, and all the people who benefit from it in all industries. You're talking about millions of people. You're talking about thousands in powerful positions, and the deep state is a part of it. And they went after this. They had a coup. We had a coup in the United States. Forget Trump. We had a coup. And we should never allow that to happen. Here's Jimmy Dore.
So it was amazing to watch Mueller testify. He seemed worse than Joe Biden. The guy doesn't seem to have even control of his faculties. Like when you said that he wasn't aware of the stuff that's in his report, he wasn't aware of the stuff that's in his own report. Like Robert Mueller looked like a puppet that they just stuck a stick up and put him on that thing. He didn't know what he was. I'll give you an example of how out of touch with his own report Robert Mueller was. Now, the whole thing started with this Steele dossier. Now, the Steele dossier was funded by the DNC and the Hillary Clinton campaign. What does that mean, funded? So they hired a company called Fusion GPS to go dig up dirt on Donald Trump. That's called opposition research. So they hired a spy, a former spy, a foreign spy from England, Richard Steele, to go dig up dirt on him because he had ties with the people in Russia. So what Richard Steele did was he called people he knew inside the Kremlin and asked for dirt on Donald Trump. And they made up stories because Richard Steele was paying them for their stories. So that's how the dossier got put together. By the way, it's all the dossier. Complete bull, completely made up, and the Democratic Party and Hillary Clinton lied for a year straight to investigators that they funded it. They used that to get the FISA warrant on the Trump administration so they could spy on them. They used opposition research paid for by the Hillary Clinton campaign to get a FISA warrant, which is highly unethical to do that. Time and time again, when Mueller was pressed on something, he lied. He would lie, and he's used to lying to Congress. He lied to us about the Iraq and weapons of mass destruction and Al-Qaeda. He did that. He went right along. That's why he was chosen for this role, because he's a company man. He's going to go along with what the establishment and the intelligence community wants him to do. So he knows that there's no crime. In fact, watch this. So he knows there's no crime, and what he's actually doing is he's trying to still put a cloud out there in service of the establishment that there is a crime, even though he can't prove it, even though he investigated it for 2 years. This is nothing but an establishment hoax, as Glenn Greenwald calls it. It is a hoax being perpetrated on the American people, and Robert Mueller is the perfect tool to help perpetrate that hoax.
Is it true the evidence gathered during your investigation did not establish that the president was involved in the underlying crime related to Russian election interference as stated in Volume 1, page 7?
We found insufficient evidence of the president's culpability.
Okay. On our next program, we will play two clips from people you've never heard of who were hired by Seth Rich, the person who worked inside the DNC, who saw the corruption inside by Donna Shalala and Hillary Clinton and her group, and where Bernie Sanders rightfully should have been the Democratic nominee and would have won the presidency easily over Trump, they subverted that. So then he stole the documents, got into the hands of a man named Murray, who a former ambassador to Great Britain, who then got him in the hands of Julian Assange. Russia had nothing in the world to do with this. There's not a single iota of evidence that he did. And for all the good journalists, the Abby Martins, Chris Hedges, the whistleblowers, Wim Binney and Kurokawa, they already know this, and they said it. But the left didn't want to hear it. The corporatized, weaponized left didn't want this message to get out. So they just wasted 3 years instead of rebuilding America in ways that benefit the average person. I'm Gary Noll. Thank you all for listening. Have a nice day.
Let me hear the worshipers!